This is the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show number 40. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Cricket Coach Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com and email us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. My name's David Hinchliffe in the UK.
And I'm Kevin Sampath from Australia. Coming up on the show, we explore into the theme of strength and conditioning. Ian Pond shares another fast bowling tip with us, and we also have a chat with Mark Costin and get a few more league cricket tips. So David, I've been browsing through the site and I noticed there's a new addition to the newsletters on Pitch Vision.
What we've tried to do is try and make things a little bit more regionalised, so it doesn't matter where you're listening in the world, you get a little bit more relevant content to the cricket coaching tips that you get. So we've got regional newsletters for different parts of the world. We've got one for your neck of the woods, Kevin, the Australasia edition. We've got one for my area, the United Kingdom and Europe. We've got an Indian edition, a Pakistani edition, an African edition, and a North American edition.
Yeah, well, David, I know you're only human, but sounds like a lot of work.
Well, that's why I'm mentioning it on the show. Of course, if you want to subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to pitchvision.com and put your email address into the free weekly updates box and choose your edition and you'll start getting those. But what I'm really looking for is for someone who lives in that area. I'm looking for someone who is prepared sort of once a week to write a short introduction to the newsletter about some kind of issue or something relevant to that particular area once a week. Doesn't have to be a massive essay, just a couple of hundred words to allow us to put a sort of customised introduction into the newsletter. So if anyone's interested in that, please do get in touch with us.
Fantastic. And you've also been playing on the weekend, David, have you?
Yes, luckily. It rained all week, but on Saturday it was dry. And we played one of the weaker teams, and we won quite easily. We managed 215 in 48 overs. Mm-hmm. And then we bowled them out for 49.
Well,
what have you been up to?
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the show, that the theme of this week was strength and conditioning. I've been thinking about my recent injuries, David. Like, in the previous show, I mentioned my back injury, which always used to pop up, and then I remembered my knee injury as well recently, and I've been trying to strengthen that or find ways to strengthen that. So I've been talking to a few of my mates studying physiotherapy and who are currently physiotherapists, and I've been getting a lot of mixed advice, so I don't know what really to follow. But one advice that stood out is one of the guys told me to strengthen the knee, keep running, but to run the right way. So he's suggesting that my running technique might be wrong, but I have to correct that and keep running to strengthen it and to get my legs used to running the right way. Well, if you were faced with the same problem, David, what would you do to strengthen your knees?
Well, I'm not a physiotherapist, so I wouldn't want to go against any advice that you've been given by someone who's trained and sort of knows your case. As I said last week, I think the key is not to try and fix the problem where the pain occurs, because that isn't necessarily where the problem is. The problem might be somewhere further up the chain. You know, everything in our body is linked together. All the muscles are linked together. And that link is called a kinetic chain. So if there's a weakness in some point of the chain, then the pain could come out somewhere else a bit further down the chain. So it could be that there's say an imbalance in the mobility between your left and your right side of your hips. Or it could be that you've got very strong quad muscles, but very weak glute muscles. So the front is strong, the back is weak. That's quite common. Oh, it could be, you know, it could be something more substantial than that. You know, it might be something to do with the bone or the ligaments or something like that. Again, it's not my real area of expertise, so I don't want to go too far down the road of saying, well, it's, you know, if you do this, then you'll be okay. Generally speaking, if you have a sensible training program, which is based on sort of functional movements, you know, movements which are more likely to be done in real life, or playing cricket or playing sport or whatever, and it's well balanced, you know, it covers the left and the right side, the front and the back of your body, and everything, you know, everywhere is equally strong and equally mobile, then you're going, generally speaking, you're going to have less chance of having any pain. So,
yeah,
but that's my viewpoint from someone who comes from a more of a strength and conditioning and a cricket coaching type background than someone who comes from a physiotherapy type background. Someone from a physiotherapy type background would be probably more thinking along the lines of injuries and rehabilitation and that kind of thing. And that's a completely alien world to me, to be honest. You know, I know a little bit about it, but certainly not enough to give any decent advice.
Well, I've sort of decided that if the injury pops up again, I mean, it could have just been a one-off because it happened only 2 seasons ago and then it happened last season again. But if it happens again this year, I should probably go check it out. If it is, as you said, a bone or a ligament damage problem. But I'm pretty sure what you've said is right. Like, there's something else wrong. I'm doing somewhere else while I'm bowling that's affecting my knee. So definitely have to get sort of tune everything else up. All right. Well, we have again Ian Pond, the fast bowling guru, who's also a Pitch Vision Academy coach, with a fast bowling tip for us. So let's have a listen to what Ian has to say.
Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
Hello, David.
Right, we're going to focus more on medium-paced bowlers this time.
Okay.
If you imagine the situation where the keeper's standing up and the field is up in a one-day game, they're putting on the squeeze, as they call it in the modern game, do you change the way that you bowl?
Depends what you mean by change the way that you bowl. If you're saying if the keeper's standing up and you know we're trying to keep the game tight, is my mindset different or do I physically bowl differently? Then the answer to that would be yes, because if I was a medium-paced bowler coming from a short run-up or shortish run, having the keeper up to the stumps means, firstly, I can't really bowl down the leg side. Not that I'd want to, but it really focuses my attention. Secondly, it gives me a very big target to bowl at. I've got the keeper's gloves to aim at. And also, I know that that batsman isn't going to charge me. He's certainly not going to run down the pitch because the keeper's up. So what that does, it changes the dynamic, if you like, of that situation. I feel a bit more in control as a bowler because I feel like the keeper's on my side. Then he's standing up and he's protecting the stumps from my point of view. If he's 10, 15 metres back, you know, there's a whole raft of things that go on. The second thing is if you've got a ring of fielders in the infield putting the squeeze on, what's the batsman going to do with that? If he can't pierce the field, he's going to have to go aerial. And if he goes aerial, he's taking a risk. So by the sheer fact that you've put a ring of fielders and brought the keeper up, gives you two advantages. It makes sure that the batsman stays in his crease and you're forcing him to go over the top unless you bowl really bad deliveries. On the positive side, for you as a bowler, it means that your focus and concentration is trying to make the ball bounce into the keeper's gloves so he doesn't have to dive all over the place. That means it's likely to be just short of a length, just behind a length. And also, his glove's going to be outside off stump, which gives you a really good line to aim at, which then also means you're going to be bowling in that channel, that corridor of uncertainty, as Jeff Boycott calls it. So I think keeper up, ring of fielders if you're a medium pacer, particularly if it's doing a little bit off the pitch, it's probably what you see on most Saturday or Sunday afternoons in a club game. You certainly see it a lot in limited overs professional cricket. I'm always a fan, if it's just a regular game of cricket, of not putting men out for the bad ball, but rather having fielders for the good ball, like a slip or people catching. You know, I would rather put people in for good deliveries rather than stick them out on the fence for bad ones. But having said that, we're talking about putting the squeeze on, and it might be that dropping a man out of the ring helps the ring fielders to come in even tighter. Because sometimes if you've got a fielder in the ring and he knows there's cover behind him, he can come in a little bit even tighter on the batsman and really cut those singles off because he knows if the ball's hit past him, there's a fielder on the fence to mop it up for him. So I think it does change the way you bowl. It certainly changes you mentally. I think it definitely gives you a lot of advantages and it probably takes a little bit of momentum away from the batting side. But the point to all of these things, David, is when you set a field like that, you've still got to be able to bowl to it. So as long as it's bowled to, I think it's a pretty good tactic.
If you want coaching from Ian Font, you can access Pitch Vision Academy's How to Bowl Faster coaching course on www.pitchvision.com/academy. Now it's time for the League Cricket Tips with the LCA. It's part two of our chat with Mark Costin, who's the coach of the Bank of England Cricket Club in the Surrey Championship. And this week we talk about coaching senior club players at the indoor nets.
When you've got a club side, a recreational side, an amateur side, how do you run a net session so people get what they want, but you also get something positive out of it?
We actually changed our winter net format slightly this year, in that historically it's always, you know, you just turn up, get in the nets, have a bat and a bowl. And then you come to the first game of the season and everyone's very unfit and can't catch or field. So rather than, I mean, most clubs will have a 2-hour net booking. We made sure that we had 2 hours twice a week. So we did a Sunday night and a Tuesday night. The Sunday night was made not compulsory, but that was when the team, it was like team training. And the Tuesday night was booked and optional for people to go there and do their own thing. They wouldn't be getting coached. They would just, you know, organise with someone, right, should we go down to the nets and do their own thing, whether it's an hour of throwdowns or bowling at a set of cones, whatever. That was sort of free to take individual responsibility for their own game. And I think if you give people responsibility, that helps. But we, in the 2-hour training session that we had, we decided that if you normally with 2 hours, by the last 20 minutes, half an hour, it's often absolutely dreadful. And bowlers are absolutely knackered, bowling a load of rubbish. And often then the bowlers have gone into bat and are just slogging. And you kind of look around and go, not sure how good a practice this is. So we decided that rather than have that and risk injuries from fast bowlers having to bowl for 2 hours and things, that we would make the first 20 minutes to half an hour of the session fitness and fielding. So you put all the nets away in a sports hall and we did lots of sprint training. This cricket's a multi-sprint sport, isn't it? The various distances that you're likely to sprint, like 22 yards, 10 yards if you're fielding close, or 30 yards if you're fielding out on the boundary. And so we did a lot of like multi-sprints like that, just to get guys' strengths up and get them panting. And lots of like core strength things like press ups and sit ups, and then we'd do 20 minutes of fielding, which would usually involve quite a lot of running around, but yeah, lots of fielding, just catching loads of balls and throwing loads of balls. And that is the best way to practice, is just to hit, bowl, catch and throw loads and loads of balls. And we got everyone doing that, and we were a little bit concerned that people might think, oh, this isn't fun, like it's a bit like an army camp and you're the sergeant major. But we were absolutely amazed that wasn't the reaction at all. Everyone absolutely loved it, like really, really loved it. People were enjoying getting like almost only a half an hour exercise class a week, and they felt so much better for it. And coming into the start of the season, the standard of fielding was unbelievable. Normally you get to the first fielding, you go outdoors after your indoor nets, you do a fielding drill, and everything's just getting dropped, and the throws are coming into the keeper's ankles and over his head. And ours was excellent. I remember the first time we went outdoors and the first fielding drill was absolutely wonderful. And we were convinced that's because we just spent 20 minutes, half an hour in it a week for 3 months in the winter. And it really did make a big difference. Just that little 20-minute spell made a massive difference to people's fitness and fielding ability. The other thing that we change sometimes is that rather than having just, you know, everyone bowling non-stop for 2 hours, we'd try and get bowlers bowling in spells. Because I think one of the dangers of net is that bowlers run in and bowl one ball and then they wait for six other bowlers to bowl. And then they bowl one ball. And often you just bowl the same ball over and over again. Whereas constructing an over is very different to that. And if you have to bowl six balls in a row, it's actually, you might want to bowl to a plan, you know, three inswingers and an outswing or whatever it is. But I do think there's a big difference in bowling six balls and bowling just one every eight balls or whatever. So we try to get bowlers bowling in pairs. So we get like the two opening bowlers would bowl 12 balls. So, you know, they'd alternate bowl six balls each, which effectively is like bowling over. By the time you're at the back of your run, the other blokes bowled, so you're just turning around to bowl. And then they'd get a break when the sort of the next seamers would come on. The first change bowlers would then do their 12. And then the spinners might bowl their 12. So we got people bowling in spells rather than just running in and bowling a ball every 30 seconds or every minute or
right,
so.
Right, yeah, good idea.
I think that's just because it makes it more realistic. And any way you can make practice more like a game has got to be a good thing.
If you play league club cricket in the UK, you can join the League Cricketers Association, have your voice heard, and save some money. Visit www.thelca.co.uk for more information. That's www.thelca.co.uk. Welcome to the listeners' question section for this week. This week's theme is strength and conditioning. And as always, you can tap into the wealth of knowledge on Pitch Vision Academy in the strength and conditioning course by Rob Arman. Visit www.pitchvision.com/academy for more information. Well, David, our first question for today is from Varun. And he is 16 years old, and he says he goes to a good gym, and he's been doing heavyweight training for 2 years. But he's only been doing it in bodybuilding techniques. And he asks, David, he has a couple of questions. His first question is, what type of fitness training is important to improving your cricket? So if you could briefly cover that, David.
Yeah, what we'll do is, because Varun has sent in quite a lot of questions, we'll just sort of fly through each one as a quick summary rather than going into a great amount of detail, just so we can cover all the bases in one go. So, yeah. What type of fitness training is important to improving your cricket? Well, he's doing the right thing by doing strength training. Strength and power training is a very good way to improve your cricket. Also, endurance-style training, work capacity-style training is an important thing, because cricket's a long game. You can spend a long time in the field. You want to make sure you've got the endurance to keep going. That doesn't necessarily mean long, slow runs, but it does mean the ability to produce power over and over again over the course of a long period. So that's the difference really between endurance and work capacity. Work capacity is sort of lots of stop starting, whereas endurance is a bit more long and slow and less relevant to cricket. And the other key thing is, well, there's two other key things. There's mobility and flexibility, and those two go quite closely together. Further the range of motion of your joints, the less injury prone you'll be, and the more power you'll be able to produce, and stability, which is the ability to keep your, particularly your back, in a safe position while you're doing things like bowling, batting, and fielding. And the other thing is recovery. Recovery training is very important, especially during the season. Things like foam rolling, stretching, and swimming and riding a bike and recovery type stuff.
He then asked David, what exercises could I do at the gym that cross over to cricket? Now, I know you've spoken about all exercises in the gym should be movements that transfer to cricket. So is that what you would recommend?
Yeah, as much as possible, make them relevant to cricket. So as much as possible, single limb, I should say, multi-joint foot positions in a similar position as the ones you would get in while you're playing cricket. So, a lunge-type position for the batsman, a squat-type position for the wicketkeeper, those kind of things. There is sort of a continuum of how relevant the exercise is. For example, a leg extension, where you sit down, you put your leg under a bar and you raise your leg up forwards. Yeah. That's an exercise for strengthening up your quad muscles in your leg. That's probably the least relevant to cricket if you want to strengthen your legs. Then you've got things like two-footed back squats, for example, where you can lift relatively much more weight because you can put a lot more weight on your back. So that'll be a general strengthening exercise. And then you've got sort of single-leg squats, which are much more relevant to cricket because most of cricket is played on one leg, running, batting, bowling. Most of this stuff is done on one leg. So, stuff which is as functional as you can get it, but that doesn't necessarily mean all the time you can do functional. For example, heavy back squats, if you want to improve your strength, heavy back squats aren't quite as functional as, say, single leg squats, but you probably do the heavy back squats because you want to improve your overall strength. If your goal is an overall improvement in strength, then heavy back squats are a good exercise to do, for example.
Yeah. All right, his next question is, could I do heavy weight training or would that affect my cricket in a bad way? Now, I know you'd say, David, that maybe you could do heavy weight training, but should it be in the right technique?
Yeah, that's the key. Yeah, nothing wrong with heavy weight training itself. It wouldn't adversely damage a player's ability to play cricket in any way. In fact, it'll probably improve their ability to stay on the park by making them more resistant to injury.
Yeah.
So, yes, heavy weight training is good and it's the most relevant. Just a couple of provisos about that, though. One, he's 16 years old. He's still growing, so he has to be careful how heavy he goes. He doesn't want to be doing big one rep max stuff, lifting as much weight as he can, because he's still growing. So you've got to be careful about that. And especially at the age that he's at, young men tend to want to lift as much weight as they can and they lose technique. So always do it with good form and good technique. And when in doubt, always go a little bit lighter than you think you can manage, just until you may be a little bit older and you've got good form behind you, or you've got a very good coach who can watch you and make sure your form is absolutely dead on. The other proviso is, wouldn't do any heavy type weight training before you play a game, either, you know, the morning of a match or the day before a match, because you can get quite sore from heavy training.
Yeah.
And being sore can affect your performance on the cricket pitch. So you don't want to do that. You want to work it out so you're having sort of a day's rest or a couple of days rest before playing cricket after any weight training.
He asks, what type of weight training techniques should I be doing? Now, I think there was something on Pitch Vision about this, David, but it's clear to briefly explain what kind of weight training techniques?
Probably think I've already answered that in terms of do functional training as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
The techniques, you want sort of low rep, multiple sets. You can superset it if you like. You know, you can put two exercises together or three exercises together. Change it up every so often so you're not doing the same workout all the time. Make sure that you train all the main movements, pushing, pulling, and stability training.
Okay. Well, this next question is an interesting question, David. He asks, what exercise, such as weight training, should I do to improve throwing speed? Now, is this more of a technique thing? I mean, improving your strength does matter, but does technique matter in this as well, like your throwing technique?
It does matter, yeah. I mean, it's very important to have a lot of elastic strength. And when I say elastic strength, I mean the ability to stretch and contract your muscles very quickly. That's what Ian Pont talks about when he talks about the bowling action and the ability to stretch and contract the muscles very quickly. It's called elastic strength because that's exactly what it's like. If you take a piece of elastic and you ping it, it pings very quickly. Well, that's what you want to reflect with a throw or a delivery of a cricket ball. So exercises which train that kind of stretch reflex is called, that's what the javelin throwers call it, stretch reflex, is stuff where you are doing something very quickly. So although sort of your traditional weight training where you're doing low rep work and high weights is good, you tend to do that quite slowly because it's a high weight. Even though you're trying to lift the weight quickly, you can't because it's a heavy weight. So what you also want to do is you want to combine that with stuff where you move very quickly as well. So power type exercises, the easiest of those is, you know, just grabbing a medicine ball and doing overhead throws, doing side throws, doing medicine ball slams down onto the ground, doing overhead throws so you throw them backwards over your head and things, you know, just lots of different angles that you're throwing the ball from. And that will improve things. And you could also try that trick we've talked about where you've got a heavy ball and a light ball. Although that's not proven in cricket, certainly not in cricket, there's no harm in trying. If you've got a heavier cricket ball, a normal weight cricket ball, and a light ball, maybe even a tennis ball or something, the heavy ball will give you the strength in the throw, the light ball will give you the speed in the throw, and then if you always have to do the actual cricket ball as well to make sure that you're not losing the technique of the throw.
He asks, is there any specific muscles to focus on to improve bat speed, power, bowling speed, and running speed? Now, Dave, I think this is all over the body. He needs to improve, but is core the center, the core muscles?
Yeah. Now, the point I want to make with this question is there are no specific muscles to focus on because we want to get away from the idea of focusing on the body as separate muscle groups. It's not a very helpful way of defining it. That's the way we've always defined it, you know, and that's the way we always, you know, if you want to improve the strength of your shoulders, you do shoulder raises. If you want to improve the strength of your calves, you do calf raises. Well, yeah, that is right, but that's a very bodybuilder way of looking at it. You know, you're looking at each part of the body and trying to build it up individually rather than looking at the whole, the movements. So you're absolutely right, though. It does all start with the core. You always train the core first and the extremities last, which again is against the sort of traditional bodybuilding method of saying you train the extremities first and then maybe you throw in a few sit-ups at the end of your session. But the core is the most important part because the core is where the power is generated in throwing, in batting and in bowling. So, and running. So you want a strong core, strong hips, strong backside, you know, as they say, the bowler, he's got a good backside when they say that about a good bowler. That's not a coincidence. That's because he's got a good core. You know, that's probably natural. And then you train the extremities last. Yeah. And so you train the legs and the arms last after you've trained the core. So, think of it as whole body movements. Always think core first, but don't isolate the core. I'm not talking about doing sit-ups. I'm not talking about doing crunches. I'm talking about thinking of the body as the core is where the power is generated. The limbs are the sort of the last part of the equation. And then train with that thinking in mind and you'll be more relevant to cricket.
His last question, David, he says, as a leg spin bowler, is there any other training, working out, stretching that would help me become a better bowler? If so, what is it? Now, I'm a bit critical of this, David. I think to become a better bowler, you'd need practice. And by that, you'd have to make sure all your technique, everything is perfect. Practice all that and try get that into your muscle memory. But what do you reckon?
Yeah. What fitness training can do for you, strength and conditioning training can do for you is the first thing it does is it gets you on the park. It reduces your chance of being injured. So obviously that's going to make you a better bowler if you're not injured because you're on the park. The second thing it does is it enhances performance. So in terms of spin bowling itself, the main thing it's going to be allowing you to do is to bowl longer spells. So it's not necessarily going to make you, you know, spin the ball anymore or bowl with any more accuracy, but it will allow you, if you're the fitter you are, the longer a spell you can bowl before fatigue sets in and you start to lose your accuracy.
Yeah.
So those really are the two benefits. Less injuries, longer bowling spells. But in terms of actually becoming a better bowler, Kevin, you're absolutely right. What you've got to do is practice. You've got to get your bowling technique absolutely dead on. And you've got to bowl and bowl and bowl until you're blue in the face. And then when you are blue in the face, bowl some more.
Our next question is from Alexander. And he's a pace bowler, David. And his question is, a pace bowler's action is essentially a power movement. And this power movement is responsible for the speed of the ball. That is, how fast is the bowler bowling? Now, power, to put it crudely, by what he understands, is a combination of strength and speed. He says, so let's put this in a fast bowling context. Hypothetically, the stronger a fast bowler is, the more weight he can lift in the main exercises, such as squats, deadlifts, rows, bench press, etc. And the more speed he can generate in terms of body movements through training such as plyometrics and pure power movements like Olympic lifts, such as clean and jerk, push press, etc., the faster the bowler should be. But he says, I'm thinking of this more in terms of an equation. That is, if power equals strength times speed, and a fast bowler's action is a power movement, increasing both strength and speed, this should lead to faster bowling. Would this be correct? What do you reckon, David?
Yeah, I actually really like this question. It's you know, it follows a very logical line. So let's just look at that line of logic and see if we can follow it and improve on it slightly. A pace bowler's action is essentially a power movement. That is correct. The more force you can put behind the ball, the faster that the ball will travel to the other end of the pitch. That's just biomechanics. That's just the laws of physics in action. So the faster your arm comes over, for example, the faster the ball's going to come out, right?
Yeah.
So that's speed, the faster your arm comes over. So absolutely right. But you also need a certain amount of strength to be able to bring your arm over quickly. So yes, power is strength times speed. That is absolutely correct. The next part is where it slightly falls down. It's a very sensible argument in that if you've got strength times speed with power, then therefore you'll be a faster bowler. That is absolutely correct. However, we've got evidence to prove otherwise. For example, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I would think, probably wouldn't be a very quick bowler when he was, at his peak in strength and size. And we talked about this other week. Hussein Bolt, he was very average bowler, but he's far and away the world's fastest man. So, and he's got incredible speed and incredible power. So what's going on there? Why is that falling down? Well, the reason is there is another element to it rather than just pure force. And that is the ability to fire your muscles in the exact order that you need to get the ball down the other end, to put the maximum force behind the ball. If those muscles don't fire in the correct sequence, stretch and contract, the stretch reflex, which we've talked about before, like a javelin thrower, any throwing sport, basically, baseball pitch or anything like that. If those muscles don't fire in exactly the right order, if something is slightly out, then that creates an energy leak, a block, if you like, and it slows you down. So technique is the one thing that's missing from all that, because you can produce the maximum amount of force that you can, but if you do it with bad technique, the ball's either going to come out slower or it's going to end up in the side netting or something like that. To give you a classic example, I think this might be from the Fast Bowler's Bible. I think I've stolen it from Ian Pond, which I do a lot of, most things when it comes to fast bowling, I steal from Ian Pomp. Matthew Hogarth, he said that at his peak, Matthew Hogarth could bowl a lot faster than he did.
Yeah.
And the reason why he didn't was because he closed himself off and he had to bowl around his front leg. So even though he had the potential to bowl maybe up at 90 miles an hour, he couldn't do it. Because he had to bowl around his front leg, and that slowed him down, because he couldn't drive his hip through properly. So, there's an example of a top level player who's had massive success at the highest level, and at his peak was one of the best bowlers in the world. Yet he wasn't generating the maximum force.
Yeah.
So if you like, there's an extra thing to add into the equation there. Power does equal strength times speed, but you also need to have an understanding of... I was going to say have an understanding of biomechanics, but that sounds more complicated than it is. Just understand that in order to apply maximum force to the ball, the arm has to come over at maximum speed, and for the arm to come over at maximum speed, the whole rest of the body has to work in one smooth, coordinated, flowing movement to get the ball out. So it's more than just a simple equation of strength times speed. But that's a really good question. And in fact, there's nothing wrong with any of the training that you mentioned there. Strength exercises will prevent injury. Power exercises will increase your ability to apply force to the ball. And then add those two points to better technique and you'll have a faster bowler.
This week's question section was brought to you by the strength and conditioning course by Rob Armin, the strength and conditioning coach of Glamorgan Cricket Club. If you want to access the materials the professionals have access to, go to www.pitchvision.com/academy. Before we leave you for today, we'd like to thank C-Jax and Seraphic Panoply for their fabulous music that livens up the show. don't forget that you can catch all the articles, updates, forums, and anything you hear about on the show on www.pitchvision.com. Stay tuned for our next show on the 7th of August, with the theme being spin bowling. And so if you have any questions regarding spin bowling or any feedback, please email us at mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. That's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Signing off from Sydney, Australia, this is Kevin Sampat.
And this is David Hinchcliffe in the UK.
The My Cricket Coach Show is a copyright-protected production for Pitch Vision. For more information, please visit pitchvision.com.